Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, got you in the studio once again to give us your estate planning expertise. And this week, we're going to be talking about
beneficiaries.
Beneficiaries. Yeah. Yes, we're all beneficiaries, hopefully, at one time or another.
Right. And obviously, we create an entire estate plan with them in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the beneficiaries love to get their money, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
So therefore, what are some of the things from the beneficiary's perspective? And what does it mean for a beneficiary to inherit? And we're going to go through a couple different things today's show, which is, well, what if they just inherit outright? So Danielle talked about wills and the differences between using a will and a trust. As a matter of fact, you can get all of our past podcasts. So if you're just logging on and hearing this podcast and or on the radio show, you can always go back to our website, legacyandfaith.com. You can get information there and get caught up. But at the end of the day, whether you use a will, whether you use a trust, those are the two instruments that we can use. Somebody is going to get the leftover or the residual part of the estate now. Mm. So there's a couple different beneficiaries that we're going to take a look at. What does it mean to use a will? What does it mean to use a trust? And how does that change the beneficiary's experience?
Mm-hmm.
And then also I just want to touch base about what does it mean to have a specific gift as a beneficiary?
Okay.
So that's kind of our starting point, is a little bit of a continuation here of closing an estate. So we got to get the money out of the estate now and into the hands of the proper people.
So is this, how does this work then with somebody who was on a beneficiary designation? So it wasn't even part of any kind of trust or will, it just...
Yeah, great
just
question.
Go straight to them.
Exactly. So there's a couple different ways that a beneficiary can actually receive money. So one of them is what you're talking about, the beneficiary designation.
Like
so
on an IRA. Or an
IRA. That's right. So retirement accounts, life insurance, bank accounts oftentimes have IRAs. So that means that you are working with an institution. And that financial institution, again, a life insurance company, a brokerage firm such as Schwab or Fidelity or Vanguard or any of these other financial institutions out there, or banks, you signed a contract with that financial institution for them to hold your finances. So in other words, there is a contract back and forth. And in that contract, whether you saw it or not, or whether you even read the contract, because other than me, who in the world would read a financial contract?
Right.
So embedded in every contract is language that says, should you die, account holder. So you're the account holder. You're the one who is the owner of the account. Should you die, then the financial institution is going to do this. And in there is a beneficiary designation that says anyone that you list and we have accepted, then we are going to hold your money until that person comes to us and they fill out our form and they demonstrate that they're the proper person to actually receive it. And then what we're going to do is we're just going to hand over whatever percentage or amount that they are entitled to based upon what you told us. So most financial institutions have a beneficiary designation or a transfer on death designation. And that is an operation of law because we have a contract and they are bound by their duty of the contract to perform their part of the contract. And that part of the contract is you tell us who to give the money to and we will do this. So a TOD, a beneficiary designation, is a way that we sidestep probate, actually, as well.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but it sidesteps the will and it sidesteps the trust. One of the biggest issues I see in trying to use beneficiary designations, instead of letting the estate plan itself do the bulk of the work, is that old beneficiaries are on the accounts.
Like your previous wife or...
Oh, yeah. Life insurance policies, fabulous for ex-spouses. Mm-hmm. They really love you then. All the pain and agony somehow is forgiven once they get the life insurance funds. So yes. And not only that, even just last week, we had somebody calling. They saw us 18, 24 months ago. They never did their planning with us. So they came in. They said, hey, we need to do this. They didn't do it. So guess what the phone call was last week? I'm in dire straits. My health incident has increased. Can you come over and do an emergency plan for me? Okay, so let's think through that. If I could, if I had the space to even do an emergency estate plan.
What's an emergency estate plan?
That means I got to rearrange my entire schedule to get to you because you're calling me at the last minute before you think you're going to die. And by the way, that is going to cost a lot more because I am rearranging or trying to meet your needs. Okay. So now we're in emergency mode. We got to get documents around here. So let's say that this person now on their deathbed makes a decision that says, I want this person, that person, and that person. Is there any chance at all that we could get to the beneficiary designations and actually change them to align with this deathbed desire, with this last minute desire? So one of the biggest disconnects is that when you use a beneficiary designated option, it because it's disconnected from the estate plan, because remember, as an operation of law, your will is meaningless to those assets. And so is your trust if you have a trust. So therefore, because it's an operation of law, it doesn't blend properly and it may not look the same as your estate plan. So that was just an example, which is you're going to call me at the last second because you feel you're dying and you're going to want me to make something happen with financial assets. And yet the financial assets have an operation of law sitting in the background that I don't even have time to touch.
Don't those financial assets, though, they require that you have a beneficiary designation?
Oh, no.
They
no,
don't?
No.
So you can just leave that blank,
you can leave it blank.
Or refer to the... to the Holland Trust?
Sure. Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly. However it's going to work. So if you do not fill out the financial or the beneficiary designation, then many financial institutions are now telling you what they will do. They will first try to find a spouse. Then they will try to find kids. And if not, then they'll give it to your estate. Some of them just go, forget it. If you don't do it, then we're just giving it to your estate, meaning someone is from your estate is going to have to come forward.
And they don't keep it. That they definitely don't like your no. your if it didn't have if you didn't fill out a beneficiary designation, no. say, well, okay, I guess nobody wants his money, so we'll just keep it. That doesn't happen.
No. As a matter of fact, they have a legal obligation to, after a period of time of knowing that somebody has died, to actually inform Washington State, and it would go into an unclaimed a portion of Washington law. So no, they're not allowed to keep it. It would go to unclaimed. I forget exactly what the terminology is. I can't remember. I just know it's out there. So unclaimed funds. So it would actually get back to Washington State, and then they're going to hold it for a period of years before it actually becomes Washington State. So if you have the fear that Washington is going to get it, is it possible? Yep. Just don't do your estate planning. It is a possibility, but it doesn't happen all that often.
Okay.
All right. So beneficiary designation is one way, and that means that it looks and operates a lot like a will. So a will is a check writing instrument. It, at least you've expressed with anything that is not joint ownership, because joint ownership is another way you can inherit, right? So if I have a joint bank account with my wife, I die because the man always dies in my story first. So I die because my wife is a joint owner. She's going to, again, by operation of law, be entitled to receive that account. Okay. So if not, if we don't have joint ownership or we don't have a beneficiary designation, let's think of a house. How many of you have a beneficiary designation on your house? Not many of you are raising your hand, probably one out of the, I'm sure, millions of people that are listening to me. And so Now what do we do? Now we go through probate, and a will is going to now take over the instructions. So now we get to the estate planning document at least. And a will is going to then distribute to the beneficiary. So that property either has to be sold. The beneficiaries have to would want to either rent it, hold it, or sell it. Maybe one of the beneficiaries wants to step up and pay the estate for it. So now there's some family dynamics of what is in everyone's best interest. The personal representative or the executor of the estate has that legal authority to manage it and in the best interest of the beneficiaries. But let's assume at some point in time it's sold. Now we have cash, and then it operates, the estate plan itself operates specifically through a will to get you the cash and to get you the money. So now we're getting money out of the estate, whether it's by beneficiary designation, whether it's by a will. Cash is leaving the estate after everything else has been paid. Debts have been paid. Expenses have been paid of the decedent. Now cash is exiting. And it's an open hands, right? So somebody gets cash in their hand. So that's a good day, specifically for the beneficiary.
And these are people who are named in the will.
That, or on the beneficiary designation, as you have accurately said. So that's right. If you're not named in the will, and an asset actually hits the will, goes through the probate process, then
like, give it to my family isn't specific enough.
No, because then we're going to have a tough time.
Okay.
We're going to have a real tough time figuring that one out.
Or give it to my spouse, but doesn't name the spouse.
We could probably find that one more easily because that there is a specific designation of what a spouse means.
Okay.
And so I could probably find a spouse. But giving it to my family or being too generic is problematic and opens up the opportunity for anyone to say that they're family, or family also meant cousins, or family also meant grandkids, or family also meant my dog.
I can't imagine that really happens much, does it?
I have a statistic. I haven't been able to duplicate it. In other words, find supporting evidence. But I do have a statistic that in Washington state, 20% of wills are contested in one way or another.
Hmm.
That is a high number, in my opinion.
Hmm.
Again, I'm trying to be very forthright, which is I don't have multiple articles or multiple statistics with that. I have found one, and I wouldn't quote it if I didn't think it was reasonably trustworthy. So that's a high number of people saying I'm ticked off, or I was left out, or the will is not appropriate, or the executor/personal representative is not acting right.
Mm.
They're not distributing. They're holding the house. They're holding the land, and they're not doing their job properly. So all of those together is probably a 20%. So I guess if you really think about all the different ways that you can attack a will or a trust, it would probably make sense that, maybe 20% is not such an astronomical number. It wouldn't be just that the beneficiary is challenging. It's that they're challenging it in a manner that they are being mistreated one way or another, probably holding on or not doing proper accounting. So you hold on to assets or you don't do a proper accounting are the biggest reasons why somebody would point a finger. Yes, some people have been left out of a will and their claim is that wasn't proper. Incompetency is another issue that is out there, is that somebody makes a change at the last minute that is inconsistent with everything that's been done in the past. So those are some of the ways that people challenge. But ultimately, everything gets settled one way or another, hopefully not through the courts, but it happens. Now we make a distribution, money is distributed, it goes into their hands, and we'll come back and talk about that compared to what happens if you're a beneficiary in a trust.
Okay, Paul Grant talking about the beneficiary's perspective as an estate closes, and we'll continue with this discussion in a moment. People are intrigued by your services. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. Head over to legacyandfaith.com.
More of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week with Paul Grant. He's explaining the beneficiary's perspective in closing an estate, and we talked about beneficiary designations here in the first part of the show. Getting now more to what happens if you start getting things from a trust versus just getting money outright. So
yeah.
How does that differ?
Yeah, so a true will doesn't have trusts built into it. A will, in its pure form, is just a document that gives court instructions who our beneficiaries are and says, get the assets of my estate to these certain people and just put it into their hands, please. So there is a instrument called a testamentary trust, which I am not a big fan of at all. If you've heard other podcasts or radio shows with me talking about a testamentary trust, it's where an attorney will put a trust inside of a will. So you have to go through the probate process just to get the money into the trust versus a revocable living trust, which is a trust that is created now instead of at death. And we intentionally transfer all of our assets to the trust. That is the instrument that I tend to favor being utilized for many, many reasons. So we're not going to get into that today. But if that is the type of trust that I'm talking about, is that whether it springs out of death, a testamentary trust, or whether it's one that that has been intentionally designed, assets move into these trusts, and now the beneficiaries are named inside the trust. So we have the assets being controlled by the trustee, and we have beneficiaries within the trust. So why would somebody use a trust for the purposes of distributing money to a beneficiary? Well, unfortunately, many trusts still just simply say, give the money to the beneficiary. Now,
why is that unfortunate?
Yeah, well, just because in my brain, why did you use a trust?
Oh.
Is that other than the possibility of maybe some tax benefits to a trust for spouses, but then after that, if you started building an instrument based upon good tax reasoning, why destroy the tax purpose to the beneficiary? So we'll get into that in a later show. But the trust itself will name the beneficiaries. Most of them still just say, write the check out of the trust and let the trust be done. So it operates like a trumped up will, actually. It's holding assets. Unfortunately, most of the assets don't get to the trust. That's a whole nother story and a whole different radio show. Then the trust says distribute. So the one thing that it might have done, just possibly, is that it could have sidestepped probate if indeed that was one of the main objectives, or it could have added in a spousal trust. If the trust was actually followed, there may be tax benefits to that decision. Mm-hmm. So in my practice, if you were to walk into my law office and you say, we've got about $1.5 million or more, I am going to lead you into a trust model specifically because of tax issues, because you have a great possibility of getting to $2 million. And there's an estate tax in Washington that we need to be concerned about. So a trust has built in benefits when you are married, okay? When you are married, It has built-in benefits to ensure that that the tax alignment will properly happen versus a testamentary trust. Now, from the beneficiary perspective, there's a couple other reasons why we would use a trust model, which is maybe we have a beneficiary that is unable to manage money for themselves, such as a special needs individual, so somebody with disabilities. Maybe it's someone who is very young and cannot manage money. Nowadays, as I keep getting older, 20-year-olds keep getting younger, so that's young to me nowadays.
Maybe your spouse is infirm themselves, too.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to develop a plan to assist our spouse. Mm-hmm. And then here's the one that we don't like to talk about, which is somebody just doesn't have the skill set or has never learned how to properly manage money. Look, there's a lot of great people out there that just don't know how to manage money. Mm. It doesn't make them a bad person. They have other phenomenal gifts and talents. They have an artsy side that blows us away, but yet they can't hold two pennies together without it finding the ground somehow, one way or another. So it doesn't mean that they're bad or wrong. It just means that they don't have that skill set, or they just don't have they're not wired to think about finances, and that is okay. We may need to put some boundaries or some assistance around that individual so that they don't overspend their money, because if they don't know how to manage it, they may not find they don't have the proper relationships out of the gate probably to help them with that. They don't know the tax consequences. They don't know how to invest properly. And what they do oftentimes, again, this is not intended to be an overly critical statement, which is they may be really good at spending it, okay? Because if they don't have the skill set, they don't have the financial thought process of, I'm going to need to use this money for a long period of time. So trusts are a great instrument. It's a great tool to help somebody get on a monthly amount that will come to them to assist them long term, because they just may not be able to do it themselves for one reason or another, whether it's through disability, whether it's just through lack of education, or it's just not who they are. All of those are fine. That could be a trust model needing to happen.
Mm-hmm. How often is this scenario come up, do you think, where parents do feel like they want to, you know, you hear the term, you know, control from the grave, how the money is spent, and as opposed to just giving it to them outright?
Yeah. And
what does it matter to you? You're gone now.
Yeah, and notice my language. It's boundaries. It's assistance instead of control. Have I been doing this for a day or two to help people think of it differently? Yeah, there is a perception of I am gone and I don't want to control from the grave. And well, my response is, well, why not?
okay.
But in all honesty, let's think about this, which is, number one, who is the current person that God has given dominion and has given the responsibility to manage that? It's you right now. And so are you not being the best steward of what God has put into your hands to think through how does this money pass to the next generation and what is in their best interest? Now, I also have a problem. I have younger daughters. 20-year-olds are younger now. They're 25 and 26. And as a father, I look at them and I see some of their financial habits. I'm proud of some of them and I scratch my head at a couple others. I'm sure my parents still scratch their head at a couple of my financial decisions. But nonetheless, that's just the way it is between different generations, different values of money, different purposes of money. So my position is that I want to make sure that I leave a plan that is in their best interest. And that best interest, as I see it today, may be giving them some good boundaries of how to utilize what I give them at the end of the day so that they can have it for a longer period of time. That doesn't mean that I'm going to do it for the rest of their life, but it just means that there is a period in time when I'm going to hopefully help and guide them through that process. Mm-hmm. So number one, I would say you are the steward of what God has placed in your hands. And this is just Paul Grant And I do believe that God is very interested in legacy. I believe that there is clear biblical support that he thinks in terms of legacy. So should you. And legacy may or may not be just handing money to somebody. It may mean that you need to assist them. So those are the opportunities. We'll pick up this next week. We'll continue this conversation about the beneficiary's perspective and the beneficiary side of estate planning.
Okay, intriguing stuff. If you're intrigued yourself by Paul's approach to these subjects and you want some help, some perspective from him, how do people get in touch with your services, Paul?
Yeah, they can head over to legacyandfaith.com, past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. We would love to hear from you, legacyandfaith.com.
And it's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.